We are continuing chapter 29 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. And we stopped sort of in the middle of their conversation.
Vahine al Harry Potter.
Vahine ha Harry Potter. So remember they were talking with Moody. So Hermione had just suggested that there were other ways he could have disappeared. And Moody complimented her. Hermione flushed pink with pleasure.
Ew.
Well, he wasn't invisible, said Harry. The map shows invisible people. He must have left the grounds then. But under his own steam, said Hermione eagerly, or because someone made him. Yeah, someone could have pulled him onto a broom and flown away with him, couldn't they have? Ron said quickly, looking hopefully at Moody, as if he too wanted to be told he had the makings of an Auror.
We can't rule out kidnap,
growled Moody. He always growls everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to hurt my throat. So, said Ron, do you reckon if he's somewhere inside Hogsmeade?
Could be anywhere, said Moody, shaking his head. Only thing we know for sure is that he's not here.
Mm-hmm. He yawned widely so that his scars stretched and his lopsided mouth revealed a number of missing teeth. Then he said,
Now, Dumbledore's told me you three fancy yourselves as investigators, but there's nothing you can do for Mr. Crouch. The Ministry will be looking for him now. Dumbledore's notified them. Potter, you just keep your mind on the third task.
What? Said Harry. Oh, yeah. He hadn't given the maze a single thought since he'd left it with Crumb the previous night.
Should be right up the street, this one,
said Moody, looking up at Harry and scratching his scarred and stubbly chin.
From what Dumbledore said, you've managed to get through stuff like this plenty of times. Broke your way through a series of obstacles guarding the Sorcerer's Stone in your first year, didn't you?
We helped, said Ron quickly. Me and Hermione helped. Moody grinned.
Well, help him practice for this one, and I'll be very surprised if he doesn't win, said Moody. In the meantime, constant vigilance, Potter. Constant vigilance.
He took another long draw from his hip flask, and his magical eye swiveled into the window. The topmost sail of the Durmstrang ship was visible through it.
You two,
counseled Moody, his normal eye on Ron and Hermione.
Stick close to Potter, all right? I'm keeping an eye out but all the same, you can never have too many eyes out.
Sirius sent back their owl the very next morning. It fluttered down beside Harry at the same moment that a tawny owl landed in front of Hermione, clutching a copy of the Daily Prophet in its beak. She took the newspaper and scanned the first few pages and said, Ha! She hasn't gotten wind of Crouch. And then joined Ron and Harry in reading what Sirius had to say on the mysterious events of the night before last. Harry, what do you think you were playing at, walking off into the forest with Victor Crumb? I want you to swear by Return Owl that you're not going to go walking with anyone else at night. There is somebody highly dangerous at Hogwarts. It is clear to me that they want to stop Crouch from seeing Dumbledore, and you were probably feet away from them in the dark. Could have been killed. Your name didn't get into the Goblet of Fire by accident. If someone's trying to attack you, they're on their last chance. Stay close to Ron and Hermione. Do not leave the Gryffindor Tower after hours, and arm yourself for the third task. Practice stunning and disarming. A few hexes wouldn't go amiss either. There's nothing you can do about Crouch. Keep your head down and look after yourself. I'm waiting for your letter giving me your word you won't stray out of bounds again. Sirius. Who's he to lecture me on being out of bounds, said Harry in mild indignation after he folded up Sirius's letter and put it inside his robes. After all the stuff he did at school. He's worried about you, said Hermione sharply. Just like Moody and Hagrid, so listen to them. Nobody's tried to attack me all year, said Harry. No one's done anything to me at all. Except put your name in the Goblet of Fire, said Hermione. And they must have done that for a reason, Harry. Snuffles is right. Maybe they're biding their time. Maybe this is the task they're going to get you.
Sure is.
Look, said Harry impatiently. Let's say Sirius is right. And someone stunned Crumb to kidnap Crouch. Well, they would have been in the trees near us, wouldn't they? But they waited until I was out of their way until they acted, didn't they? So it doesn't look like I'm their target, does it? They couldn't have made it look like an accident if they'd murdered you in the forest, said Hermione. But if you died during a task... They didn't care about attacking Crumb, did they, said Harry. Why didn't they just polish me off at the same time? They could have made it look like Crumb and I had a duel or something. Harry, I don't understand it either, said Hermione desperately. I just know there are a lot of odd things going on, and I don't like it. Moody's right. Sirius is right. You've got to get in training for the third task straight away. And make sure you write back to Sirius and promise him you're not going to go sneaking off again alone. More? The Hogwarts ground never looked more inviting than when Harry had to stay indoors. For the next few days, he spent all of his free time either in the library with Hermione and Ron looking up hexes, or else in the empty classrooms where they sneaked in to practice. Harry was concentrating on the stunning spell, which he'd never used before. The trouble was that practicing it involved certain sacrifices on Ron and Hermione's part. Can't we just kidnap Mrs. Norris? Ron suggested on Monday lunchtime as he lay flat on his back in the middle of their charms classroom, having just been stunned and reawoken by Harry for the fifth time in the row. Let's stun her for a bit. Or you could use Dobby, Harry. I bet he'd do anything to help you. Not complaining or anything. He got gingerly to his feet, rubbing his backside. But I'm aching all over. Well, you keep missing the cushions, don't you? Said Hermione impatiently, rearranging the pile of cushions they'd used for the banishing spells, which Flitwick had left in the cabinet. Just try and fall backwards. Once you're stunned, you can't aim too well, Hermione, said Ron angrily. Why don't you take a turn? Well, I think Harry's got it now anyway, said Hermione hastily. We don't have to worry about disarming, because he's been able to do that for ages. I think we have to start on some of the hexes this evening. She looked down at the list they'd made in the library. I like the look of this one, she said. This impediment curse should slow down anything that's trying to attack you, Harry. We'll start with that one. The bell rang. They hastily shoved the cushions back into Flitwick's cupboard and slipped out of the classroom. See you at dinner, Hermione said. She set off for Arithmancy, while Harry and Ron headed for the North Tower in Divination. Broad strips of dazzling gold sunlight fell across the corridor from the high windows. The sky outside was so brightly blue it looked like it had been enameled. It's going to be boiling in Trelawney's room. She never puts out that fire, said Ron as they started up the staircase toward the silver ladder and the trapdoor. He was quite right. The dimly lit room was swelteringly hot. The fumes from the perfumed fire were heavier than ever. Harry's head swam as he made his way over to one of the curtained windows. While Professor Trelawney was looking the other way, disentangling her shawl from a lamp, he opened it an inch or so and settled back in his chintz armchair so that a soft breeze played across his face. It was extremely comfortable. My dears, said Professor Trelawney, sitting down in her winged armchair in front of the class and peering around them with her strangely enlarged eyes. We have almost finished our work on planetary divination. Today, however, will be an excellent opportunity to examine the effects of Mars, where he is placed most interestingly at this present time. If you all look this way, I'll dim the lights. She waved her wand and the lamps went out. The fire was the only source of light now. Professor Trelawney bent down and lifted, from under her chair, a miniature model of the solar system contained within a glass dome. It was a beautiful thing. Each of the moons glimmered in place around the nine planets, or eight, and the fiery sun, all of them hanging in thin air beneath the glass. Harry watched lazily as Professor Trelawney began to point out the fascinating angle Mars was making to Neptune. The heavily perfumed fumes washed over him, and the breeze from the window played across his face. He could hear an insect humming gently somewhere behind the curtain. His eyelids began to droop. He was riding on the back.
I know who the insect is.
Oh, really? Is that her? He was riding on the back of an eagle owl, soaring through the clear blue sky toward an old ivy-covered house set on a hillside. Lower and lower they flew, the wind blowing pleasantly in Harry's face, until they reached a dark and broken window in the upper story of the house and entered. Now they were flying along a gloomy passageway to a room at the very end. Through the door they went into a dark room whose windows were boarded up. Harry had left the owl's back. He was watching now as it fluttered across the room into a chair with its back to him. There were two shapes on the floor beside the chair. Both of them were stirring. One was a huge snake, and the other was a man, a short, balding man, a man with watery eyes and a pointed nose. He was wheezing and sobbing on the hearth rug. "You're in luck, Wormtail," said a cold, high-pitched voice from the depths of the chair in which the owl had landed. "You're very fortunate indeed. Your blunder has not ruined everything. He is dead."
"My lord."
Oh, wait, how do we do him?
Wormtail?
Yeah.
"My lord."
"My lord."
Yeah, that's kind of good.
"My lord," guessed the man on the floor.
"My lord, I'm so pleased, so sorry."
"Nagini," said the cold voice. "You are out of luck. I will not be feeding Wormtail to you after all. But never mind, never mind. There's still Harry Potter." The snake hissed. Harry could see its tongue fluttering. "Now, Wormtail," said the cold voice. "Perhaps one more little reminder why I will not tolerate another blunder from you."
"My lord, no, I beg you."
Tip of a wand emerged from the back of the chair. It was pointing at Wormtail.
"Crucio,"
said the cold voice. Wormtail screamed as though every nerve in his body was on fire. And the screaming filled Harry's ears, the scar on his forehead seared with pain. He was yelling too. Voldemort would hear him, would know he was there.
"Harry! Harry!"
Harry opened his eyes. He was lying on the floor of Professor Trelawney's classroom, with his hands over his face. His scar was still burning so badly his eyes were watering. The pain had been real. The whole class was standing around him, and Ron was kneeling next to him looking terrified.
"You all right?" he asked. "Of course he isn't," said Professor Trelawney, looking thoroughly excited.
Her great eyes loomed over Harry, gazing at him.
"What was it, Potter? A premonition? An apparition? What did you see?"
"Nothing," Harry lied. He sat up. He could feel himself shaking. He couldn't stop himself from looking around into the shadows behind him. Voldemort's voice had sounded so close.
"You were clutching your scar," said Professor Trelawney. "You were rolling on the floor, clutching your scar. Come now, Potter, I've experience in these matters."
Harry looked at her. "I need to get to the hospital wing, I think," he said. "Bad headache."
"My dear, you are undoubtedly stimulated by the extraordinary clairvoyant vibrations of my room,"
said Professor Trelawney.
"If you leave now, you may lose the opportunity to see further than you have ever have."
"I don't want to see anything except a headache cure," said Harry. He stood up. The class backed away. They all looked unnerved. "See you later," Harry muttered to Ron, and he picked up his bag and headed for the trapdoor, ignoring Professor Trelawney, who was wearing an expression of great frustration, as though she had just been denied a real treat. When Harry reached the bottom of her stepladder, however, he did not set off for the hospital wing. He had no intention whatsoever of going there. Sirius had told him what to do if his scar hurt him again, and Harry was going to follow his advice. He was going straight to Dumbledore's office. He marched through the corridors, thinking about what he had seen in the dream. It had been as vivid as the one that had awoken him on Privet Drive. He ran over the details in his mind, trying to make sure he could remember them. He had heard Voldemort accusing Wormtail of making a blunder, but the owl had brought good news, so the blunder had been repaired. Somebody was dead, so Wormtail was not going to be fed to the snake. He, Harry, was going to be fed to it instead. He walked right past the stone gargoyle without guarding the entrance to Dumbledore's office without noticing. He blinked, looked around, realized what he had done, and retraced his steps, stopping in front of it. Then he remembered that he didn't know the password. "Lemon drop," he said tentatively. The gargoyle did not move. "Okay," said Harry, staring at it. "Pear drop? Or a licorice wand? Fizzing Wisby? Drubal's best blown gum? Birdie's bots ever flavor bean? Oh no, he doesn't like them, does he?" "Oh, just open, can't you?" he said angrily. "I really need to see him. It's urgent." The gargoyle remained immovable. Harry kicked it, achieving nothing but an excruciating pain in his big toe. Chocolate frog, he yelled angrily, standing on one leg. Sugar quill. Cockroach cluster. The gargoyle sprang to life and jumped aside. Harry blinked. Cockroach cluster, he said, amazed. I was only joking. He hurried through the gap in the walls and stepped onto the foot of the spiral stone staircase, which moved slowly upward as the doors closed behind him, taking him up to a polished oak door with a brass door knocker. He could hear voices from the inside the office. He stepped off the moving staircase and hesitated, listening. Dumbledore, I'm afraid I don't see the connection, just don't see it at all. It was the voice of the Minister of Magic, Cornelius Fudge. Ludo says Bertha is perfectly capable of getting herself lost. I agree, we would have expected to found her by now. But all the same, we've no evidence of foul play, Dumbledore, none at all. As for her disappearance being linked with Barty Crouch's.
What do you think's happened to Barty Crouch, Minister?
Said Moody's growling voice.
I see two possibilities, Alastor, said Fudge. Either Crouch is finally cracked, more than likely, I'm sure you'll agree, given his personal history, lost his mind and gone wandering off somewhere.
He wandered extremely quickly, if that is the case, Cornelius, said Dumbledore calmly.
Or else, well, Fudge sounded embarrassed, well, I'll reserve judgment until after I've seen the place where he was found. But you say it was just past the Beauxbatons carriage? Dumbledore, do you know what that woman is?
I consider her to be a very able headmistress and an excellent dancer, said Dumbledore quietly.
Dumbledore, come, said Fudge angrily. Don't you think you might be prejudiced in her favor because of Hagrid? They don't all turn out harmless, if indeed you can call Hagrid harmless with that monster fixation he's got.
Aww.
I no more suspect Madame Maxime than Hagrid, said Dumbledore just as calmly. I think it possible it is you who is prejudiced. Can we wrap up this discussion? Growled Moody.
Yes, yes, let's get down to the grounds then, said Fudge impatiently.
No, it's not that, said Moody. It's just that Potter wants a word with you, Dumbledore. He's just outside the door.
And that is the end of chapter 29. And next we'll read chapter 30 called The Pensive.
Pensive.
Or Pensive.
Yeah.
I hope you like that kitty. You're very cute. I love you so much. You're a kitten.
I love
a kitten. A very cute kitten who does an adorable kitten dance sometimes.
I'll do it for you in a minute.
Okay. You don't have to want to, but you're very, very cute.
Okay.
I love you so much. Sleep well, kitty. Good night.